Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 WAMW and worldwide live from WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber. Each week we focus on a topic important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington, Lagoda. Well, I'm excited about today's show. I have a special and a unique guest on with us today. I'm with Alicia Sheridan, who is the president and CEO of 4C of Southern Indiana. And that's an organization that we're going to talk a little bit about today. It's a community-coordinated child care resource. Alicia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Now, we're going to get into what you do, but let's start talking first about your background and how you came to 4C, and what did you do before this?
Mm-hmm. I am a speech pathologist and worked in practice in the field for about 5 or 6 years after graduating from UK.
And then UK?
UK.
Oh, well, that's okay. We are in Indiana.
I still bleed blue, but I did cross the river. So.
Sure. So then
I started working for the school district after moving back from Lexington to my hometown.
Okay.
And worked with special education, and then followed up with the opportunity to invest my time in preschool and the early intervention.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So your background is in education, is that right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how long ago did you join 4C?
A year and a half ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And your background in education, tell us, you talked about speech pathology, you talked about working in special education. How did that prepare you for what you're doing now?
I'm an early interventionist, so everything that happens 0 to 3 is hugely impactful. We know brain development, most of brain development, 80%, somewhere up to 85% of all of your brain development occurs within the first 3 years. So the sooner that you intervene, the sooner that you expose the things that you do with your children from the ages, from birth until 3 years of age, lay that framework for the rest of their lives.
That is fascinating. So this is personal to me too, because I've got several young children, and obviously they're important. And so sort of your role, if I understand it correct me if I'm wrong, your goal is to put education resources out there for early childhood.
Yes. We our organization covers 14 counties in Southern Indiana.
Okay. Can you kind of give me the area?
All the way up to around Knox on Orange County, all the way down to Vandenberg, Warwick, Spencer, that area.
Okay, so that'll cover a lot of our listening area.
Yes.
Then. Very good.
Yes. So one thing that we do is we are the intermediary for the child care assistance vouchers. So our office handles, if someone comes in that is eligible for those vouchers for child care. Child care, on average, for high quality, a level 3 or level 4, will cost around $10,000.
Wow.
And so
$10,000 a year?
A year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't go straight into the pockets of the teachers. they're not making high wages. It's really for the care of those children and what it takes to make sure that the doors are open and they're safe to be there. But so we do that. We do those vouchers. Then we also have a training system that we have in place for our providers, the people who are offering that care to your children, so that we're making sure that they are high quality, that they have the tools that they need to do to provide good quality care and education.
Gotcha.
And then we have some parenting pieces as well.
Wonderful. So if I want to be involved with 4C, say in here where we're at in Davies County, am I going to find like a 4C branded daycare? I mean, is that how it works?
Mm-hmm. It's PTQ. So it's past equality. And so we are the non-regulatory piece of things, but we prepare you for that rating. So if you are looking in Davies County for a level 3 or level 4, you can contact us and we can tell you who exists in the community that have that rating.
So essentially, if I want to know who the high quality providers are, I reach out to 4C, and 4C says, well, you've got these
yes.
5, or you've got this 1, or you've got these 20 of them.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we have a database that, let's say you, of your 5 children, you say, okay, mm-hmm. I'm driving 15 miles. This is the radius that I would like for my children to be kept. And then I want it to be a level 3 or 4. I want it to stay open until 6 o'clock. And you give us all of that information. We put it in our database and we'll create and generate a list of 15 to 20 in that with those parameters that fit that, so that you can go further and investigate and look and into those.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that that type of thing existed. So basically, it's a resource for parents to try to figure out, get your child the best care possible. Is that right?
Correct.
And you also provide, is it income-based vouchers?
Yes. Okay. So 127% of the poverty level. And I'll go back to costing $10,000. What that equates when you say $30,000, or when you say 127%, a family of four, which traditionally means two children in the home, will make gross of about $30,000. So a third of their gross income is going towards child care. Yes. So then decisions are having to be made by the family. Do you go back to work, join the workforce, or do you stay at home because of the cost that it's going to be? So we try to provide that assistance through it's federal dollars that come down through the state, and then the state uses us to get those vouchers out in these counties.
I see. So do you know off the top of your head within in our county or in Knox County, or I mean, how many typically, how many five-star or very high-level achieving providers are there going to be?
It varies by county greatly. Okay. I can tell you that on Paths to Quality, we have around 390, around about, these approximations, but in Vandenberg County, and then throughout all 14 counties, around 700. So I do have breakdowns in the office, but not off the top of my head of how much in each one.
Well, that's really interesting. I didn't realize we had that type of a resource available. Now, do you periodically have people calling you and saying, I should be a five-star and not a four-star?
They only go to four, so if they say that, I'm going, yeah, well, you are going to have a problem reaching five.
So it's zero to four.
Zero to four.
So four is the best.
Yes, correct.
And zero would be bad.
Zero, you may not have been yet made your steps through the process.
Okay.
So, there are non-licensed facilities. So there are places that choose not. It's a voluntary program. But once that you get on there, you may start at a level one, and it takes 6 months to reach a level two and then move to a level three, those types of things. So, but a level three, the biggest piece of a difference between a level two and a level three is that a level three will have a curriculum. And when I say curriculum, it doesn't mean they're going to sit down at a table and work on worksheets all day long. It is truly about the whole child and looking at cognition, language, self-help skills, social skills, and gross motor. So it's looking at the whole child, but it's curriculum-based. So there's structure behind the care that's being given.
That's wonderful. I think I'm going to send my kids wherever you're talking about. That's where they need to go. They need some structure. So yesterday, this is interesting that we're having this conversation now. I was listening to a podcast. It's called The Read Aloud Revival. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And so this guy, and my wife wanted me to listen to it, this guy's talking about, like, you know, how valuable it is to interact with your kids, to read to them even when they can't read, mm-hmm. and even when they can read, uh-huh. how there's still a tremendous amount of value to that interaction and reading to them.
So many layers there.
Yeah.
Whenever you're reading to a child, all literacy, written literacy, begins with oral language. So the sooner that you're reading to a child, talking and interacting, engaging with a child, our technology is starting to pull us away from that hand in book, our book in hand, and really looking at how much time we're interacting with a child. When you're reading to a child early on, they're learning how to hold a book. They're learning front to back. They're learning that we read as Americans. We read from left to right. When they're learning to talk about the pictures and the context that are there. And then written language comes. It starts to come around three. They start to understand, oh, wait, these letters mean something. It's orthographical work that they're doing. But to them, it's just symbols, and we're putting that together, and the more they're exposed to it, the easier the reading becomes. But again, it goes back to that oral literacy part. Do they hear the sounds? Do they understand the metalinguistics of things? And you're doing that as a parent by reading throughout the day with them. Even if it's brown bear, brown bear, 1,000 times, they're getting predictability. They can read and tell the story and learn the purpose of reading.
Well, this is really good stuff. This is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I am on with Alicia Sheridan, who is the president and CEO of 4C of Southern Indiana. We're talking about education. We're talking about community-coordinated child care. And we've covered quite a bit of ground so far. And in your last comments there, you were talking a little bit about technology and how just over the last 5, 10, 20 years, we've really taken some leaps and bounds in technology and the types of things that we use and carry on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. How has that positively or negatively impacted the work that you do at 4C?
In general, in early childhood, what we see, the positive is we have easy access to so many things. When we don't have the answer for something, we've got it right at our fingertips. We can FaceTime with people that we might not be able to spend a lot of time with. We've got working parents who can interact them with their child. It's not the in-person, but it's still a close second to that. The negative impact is that we're seeing younger and younger children using the iPads. It's being used as the quote-unquote babysitter. I'll be in Walmart and see a child that's a year of age sitting in the cart and can scroll with their fingers. So you know that they're on it quite a bit. The two-dimensional screen that we're using is really truly rewiring the brain. It is, in research, before the age of 2, you should not have any screen time. And so whenever you're watching the Disney movies and things like that, that's great. But before the age of 2, you're rewiring the brain. After the age of 2, it needs to be interactive. And it needs to be in very short bursts. So it doesn't need to be a 2-hour long movie. It does, you know, you need to be able to really sit beside a child. If it is an educational app that you're working with, that you're interacting during that time with the child. And then still balancing out with good outside time, good hands and toy, you know, those kinds of things that you're doing with your children, that it doesn't become, and we watch a lot of TV. On the way up here, we were talking about that I'm a movie fanatic. I have nothing against equipping our kids with the technology.
I thought you were
going to
say that on the way up here you were watching a movie, and I was like, "Uh-oh, how did you do that?"
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. But it is. It can be used for good purposes. A lot of the educational pre-K settings, especially within the school districts right now, are using smart boards. But they're using them interactively. So there might be a tree that's up on the screen, and you've got leaves with the pictures of the children and their names underneath them. And when the children come in and put their things away, they move the leaves up on the tree. And then after everybody gets there and they're sitting on the carpet, then they decide, they count how many leaves are on the tree and how many are on the ground still, and do an addition problem. And then make it social and sing a We Miss You song to the kids that didn't make it to school that day. So, you know, there's great ways to use technology, even in gross motor, adventures to fitness. It's a wonderful way to interact on a rainy day when you can't go outside with the kids and still get them up and moving. But it's keeping it interactive and still limiting that amount of time that you're on the screen.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of good stuff there that you're saying that probably need to unpack a little bit. And I'm impressed with your passion about this. I thought it might trigger some interesting discussion. So technology, obviously, I mean, there's some positives that mm-hmm. are there, but on the whole, perhaps, for certain age groups, it's probably not mm-hmm. at all okay.
Yeah, correct. 0 to 2, no screen time.
Mm-hmm. And your group specifically focuses on 0 to 5, is that right?
Actually, 0 to 8.
Zero to eight, okay.
We have some after-school work that we do as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so after 2 years old, you talked about making it interactive.
Mm-hmm.
And so technology, maybe it's okay, probably not the best, but if it's interactive, then is that right?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
And so at what point is it okay just to give kids the iPad and you go take a nap? When does that happen?
Well, how much do I say as a mother of 2, a single mother of 2?
Sure.
Yeah. No, technology is, I mean, you can learn things. Take a Disney movie. If rule in our house, you read the book before you watch the movie. I mean, Ferdinand, we read that book how many times when they were little? And when that movie came out, there were so many things that you could, experiences that you could either extend from the movie or have experienced and matched to the movie. It's not, technology is not a bad thing. It's just our use of it and how much we use it. Disney movies, if you watch Beauty and the Beast, there, some of the artwork that is on the top of the ceiling in the dance scene, it's real stuff. It's, you know, my daughter at 16 was watching the movie and had just taken AP Art History, mm-hmm. and said, that's whatever it is, you know, right. And she started labeling it, and I was like, and then the clock says at one point, if it ain't Baroque, don't fix it. I didn't know the Baroque time period, and she was spilling all of that out to me. So again, it doesn't have, I mean, there's lots of education that can go into a movie or a show that you're watching, Paw Patrol, those types of things. There's great things about those. It's how much as a parent that you're interacting with that and that you're doing with that after they get past that 2 years of age.
That's interesting. So, and I'm not trying to make this scary, but am I understanding correctly? You did say that under two and perhaps close to two, you're rewiring the brain.
Correct.
If there's screen time, and that's with a TV, with
an iPad, anything that you're using that way. So,
And what do you mean by that, rewiring the brain?
So in the first 3 years, I told you that's where the most of the brain growth happens, and that happens through the synapses. And the way that we're developing that wiring and all the synapses to start speaking to each other and creating this dense network is through interactions. It's through everything that we do, the rolling of the ball, the back and forth conversation that we have, all of those kinds of things, that's what's developing that. When you go to a two-dimensional screen, you're not wiring the brain to create healthy, tight, and dense synapses.
That's interesting. So, I mean, long-term, what does that mean? I mean, we probably don't have a tremendous amount of long-term study or evaluation on that, but what will that mean long-term if, say, a child gets too much screen time?
You just start behind the other children. You know, whenever you're creatively thinking, whenever you're doing higher order thinking, you learn to read up until about third grade. The way our school systems are set up is that up until the age of three, you're learning to read. When you switch to fourth grade, you're reading to learn. So whatever you're gaining those first few years, and when I talked about oral language, those types of things, and there is lots of research that where you're reading at first grade, your phonological awareness level, if tested at first grade, will predict what kind of reader you're going to be in fourth grade. So if you're behind when you get to that point, you're either going to be remediating a lot, you're going to be hitting the healthy medium, or you're going to struggle a little bit with reading. So that intentionality of reading and that intentionality of oral language and engagement around reading will create a stronger base for the growth and how quickly you can learn other concepts and get to higher order thinking.
I see. This is interesting. So first grade is important, is that right, as far as development?
All the support till you get to fourth grade is very important.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what is your role? What is your role and 4C's role in trying to get people further along up to those key data points, fourth grade, first grade, whatever it is?
Yeah. So first is the accessibility. So that's why we have the child care vouchers, trying to get those that may not have the exposure that some families that have higher resources have. So, you know, I don't know if you know the statistics about that a child in a professional home will hear over a million more words than a child in a welfare home. So there's a lot of disparity even of what is being heard, the exposure that they have. So we want to get children in high quality settings. We want to make sure that they have the opportunity to get in settings that will provide that exposure to some of that level through curriculum, through those types of things. Then we have our training series that's what we're working with. Whenever you're setting up a curriculum as the provider in a child care, are you hitting everything? Are you hitting the whole child? Not worksheets. Can they write their ABCs? You know, those kinds of things. It's developmentally, keeping it developmentally appropriate, but meeting those things to be kindergarten ready or school ready if they decide to miss kindergarten and go straight in first grade. And then we also have the parent component. So we have series to where we're really helping the parents meet those needs. One of our greatest things that we're working on right now is called conscious discipline. And it's not about, do you spank your child, do you put them in time out? It's about actually the self-regulation and executive functioning of the adult in an adult-child relationship, so that we identify our own triggers, what's going on with us, so that we can create a healthy, safe environment for our children to learn in. And again, it doesn't mean, you know, is it a bad home? I had to learn how to parent. I had to learn what were my triggers when I came home from my job and I was exhausted. I couldn't do another thing, and they go up and say, what's for dinner? And I exploded. You know, I had to learn what was it and how do I prevent that from happening. And that's what this series does in a very non-threatening way. It's not a you're doing something wrong. It's here's how to think about that. Here's how to have positive intent. Here's how to give good choices to where the child is still empowered to be empowered, but the two choices are acceptable to you. Those types of things to equip parents with.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. This has been very interesting for me so far. And I didn't have any idea really what all we were going to be able to cover, but I've enjoyed this. Mm-hmm. I guess the first opportunity that we had to interact, you guys, your organization put out a press release about a report on early learning. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you the opportunity, if you'd like, to talk a little bit about that and what was the purpose of the release.
So it is to get that exposure, to get that time before you start in the formalized education system to
so
be
the
prepared.
Zero to five.
Mm-hmm. To know that it starts prenatally, to you know that what you're doing prenatally to take care of yourself will impact where you start. But then after the child is born, where they are does make a difference. What you're doing with them every day does make a difference. And then there is research that states 1 year of pre-K before kindergarten, the impact and the level of impact that has in their ability to start kindergarten strongly and move quickly. You will see the pace in the school districts right now. What we did in first and second grade, I don't know, you're a lot younger than I am, but what we did in first and second grade was now pushed down to kindergarten. So those expectations are, there's no longer half day naps, you know, in your kindergarten setting. You're going from the time you walk through the door and you're going. But there's also research that says even with that 1 year, having 2 years of experience makes it stronger. And that's where Heckman comes in, is looking at, I'd given you some data on Dr. James Heckman, and he is a Nobel Prize laureate in economics. So he does approach it from a workforce development, invest now so that you're not investing later. We know how much money you put into special education for 18 years, but if you catch them early on, can you stop that because you've gotten that intervention in place? And so a lot of research just keeps going back to the more exposure, the more structure that you have prior to starting kindergarten and the formal education, the stronger your experience is going to be.
This is wonderful. I'm on with Alicia Sheridan from 4C of Southern Indiana, and we're talking about early childhood development and education. Alicia, we're going to have to get wrapped up here, and you provided a lot of useful information. I guess I'm going to allow you to have the final word here and maybe tell parents who are listening, or potential parents, people who want to have children in the future, what's the most important thing that you can do for your kids from that early stage till they start school?
You know, I would go back to the reading to them, because reading causes the engagement, the communication. Goldenrod books are lengthy. You don't have to read every single word on the page. You have to talk about the story that's going on. You can paraphrase. It's okay. So it's really the value of the time spent and the discussion that can happen over books. So it's not 20 minutes a day, read as hard as you can, as many books as you can. Repetition is great. Interact with your child. Be present with your child. Put your cell phone down.
Wow. That's tough for me, but that's great advice. I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful job. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligoti. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. on 4-Star Country, the General 95.9, and 1580. You can also listen to or download a copy of today's program and past shows by visiting WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Schwartzendruber, inviting you to tune in every Saturday morning at 8:35 a.m. on Memories 107.9 WAMW, and each Sunday morning on 95.9 and 1580 WAMW as we focus on the community.